Hi, this is Anne Merchant, and welcome to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council, collectively known as the National Academies. There's been an explosion of knowledge in understanding the infant brain and in pinpointing the factors that influence whether young children get off to a promising or a worrisome start. New findings have created great promise for improving public policy, service delivery, and child rearing in the United States. In particular, research advances have yielded deep insights into the importance of early life experiences and the inseparable influences of genetics and the environment, how the quality of early relationships can enhance or harm early development, the remarkable capacity for learning that is evident from birth, and the ability of quality programs to increase the odds of positive development. Yet the nation has not capitalized on the knowledge that has been gained from nearly 50 years of public investment in research on children from birth to age 5. In many ways, the United States has barely begun to use its unparalleled research capabilities to help children thrive. While ignorance is often a barrier to putting this developmental science into practice, a number of societal changes are also blocking progress. For instance, more parents are struggling to give their children time while working to provide for their families. Family poverty rates are considerable despite a strong economy. Racial and ethnic disparities persist in health and developmental outcomes. More children are spending time in childcare settings of dubious quality. Serious family problems and troubled communities stress children and threaten their future emotional stability. And many of the programs designed to improve young children's functioning don't accommodate the schedules of working parents. The National Research Council reviewed the knowledge base on the nature of early development and the role of early experiences. They then drew conclusions about what is known and issued recommendations to improve public policies, program practice, and research. Their work was guided by four key themes, the first of which is that all children are born wired for feelings and ready to learn, and that how they feel is as important as how they think, particularly with regard to school readiness. Early environments do matter, and nurturing relationships are essential. They also recognize that society is changing and that the needs of young children are not being addressed. And finally, they concluded that interactions among early childhood science, policy, and practice must be improved dramatically. 30 years ago, it was considered absurd to suggest that infants have memories, that they can experience a sense of loss, that they can explore cause and effect sequences, or that they can engage in numerical reasoning. Today, on the other hand, it's known that they have these and many other sophisticated mental capacities. This new knowledge puts to rest the long-standing debates about how much the earliest years really matter in the larger scheme of lifelong development. They matter a great deal. Children's early bad or good experiences are by no means the sole determinants of how they will fare in adulthood. They do, however, set either a sturdy or fragile stage for adapting to the rest of life's experiences. Given these findings, the National Research Council reached a number of interesting conclusions and issued some key recommendations. First, from birth to age 5, children rapidly form a foundation of skills in the emotional, social, behavioral, linguistic, cognitive, and moral areas. That sets the stage for further development. This foundation is highly malleable, and there's more opportunity for influencing it positively than was previously thought. More attention should therefore be given to the quality of children's early interactions and relationships with the important people in their lives. The same level of resources that are devoted to early literacy and numerical skills in programs focused on school readiness should be given to crafting strategies that, first, foster the development of curiosity, self-direction, and persistence in learning situations, that encourage the ability to cooperate, demonstrate caring, and resolve conflict with peers, and that focus on the opportunity to experience the motivation associated with feeling competent and loved. Meeting these goals will require the long-term collaborative investment of parents, voluntary associations, professional organizations, private philanthropy, and government. Striking disparities in what children know and can do are evident before they enter kindergarten. Because children's brains are so impressionable in these early years, negative experiences or early missed opportunities increase the odds that some children will enter school not fully prepared to learn. This unpreparedness is strongly linked to social and economic status and compromises a child's chances for later school achievement. These disparities should be lessened so children have more equal opportunities for school success. School readiness programs should be judged not only by their ability to improve individual children's performance, but also by how much they can even the disparities in readiness among different population groups of young children when they enter school. Very young children can feel deep and lasting sadness and disorganization in response to trauma, loss, and early personal rejection. Children with emotional and social problems can benefit greatly from therapeutic intervention in the preschool years, but there is a severe shortage of early childhood mental health experts and programs to help these children. Substantial new investments should be made to address young children's mental health needs. More opportunities for professional training and incentives for mental health experts to work in settings with young children are essential to improve screening, early detection, prevention, and treatment of serious early childhood mental health problems. Virtually every aspect of early human development is, to some degree, affected by the environment and by experience. The effect is cumulative, beginning early in the prenatal period and extending throughout the lifespan. In reviewing the scientific literature, the National Research Council dispelled two long-standing myths about environmental influences on child outcomes. First, the nature versus nurture debate, which centers on which more greatly influences human development, is scientifically obsolete. Genetic endowment cannot be separated from experience in shaping human growth. Each can contribute to positive or troubled development, and each is open to intervention. Second, there is no credible neuroscientific evidence that there are critical periods for any aspect of cognitive or social-emotional development in the early childhood years. Quite the contrary, research indicates that the brain can frequently recover from or compensate for key experiences that are missed. For example, young children who've been raised in neglectful orphanage settings often exhibit developmental delays that are largely reversible if they're adopted by a loving family at a relatively young age. Interventions that work, however, are rarely simple, inexpensive, or easy to implement. Children's early development depends on the health and well-being of their parents. Yet a number of children live with parents with untreated mental health problems and are exposed to violence both in their families and in their communities. The chronic stress caused by abuse, neglect, or the witnessing of trauma in the early years can have an adverse impact on multiple dimensions of cognitive, social, and emotional adaptation. Living with any one of these risks jeopardizes healthy development, but living with a number of these risks in the absence of intervention seriously imperils a child's chances of later life success. Programs to address family problems such as poor mental health, particularly maternal depression, substance abuse, and violence, should be expanded substantially. All of these problems interfere with a young child's need to form positive relationships with his or her parents and to feel safe, feelings that are crucial for learning and healthy emotional and social development. Extensive scientific evidence has identified key environmental threats to a child's developing brain, even before birth. Poor nutrition, specific infections, environmental toxins, and drug exposures. Environmental protection, reproductive health services, and early intervention efforts should expand substantially to reduce risks that arise from pre- and postnatal neurotoxic exposures. These will require the development of multiple strategies and the active participation of numerous sectors of society. Research confirms that persistent poverty, insufficient time for young children to develop rich relationships with their parents because of work pressures, and poor quality care are some of the many factors that undermine the process of healthy child development. At the same time, these threats can be relieved dramatically through changes in public policies. In 1998, nearly 22% of young children lived below the poverty line, which at the time was $14,000 for a family of three. That's a troubling number despite recent progress in lowering the child poverty rate. Poor children have been found to score lower on measures of vocabulary, language skills, understanding of number concepts, organization, and self-regulation. Competence in these areas of early communication and learning are necessary for school success. Later in life, poor children experience school failure, early parenthood, delinquency, and joblessness at rates significantly higher than their more advantaged peers. The probability that so many children will be exposed to the circumstances that either foster or accompany poverty poses an alarming prospect for the nation's future. Recent studies indicate that poverty during early childhood may be more damaging than poverty experienced at later ages, particularly with respect to ultimate academic achievement. In addition, research finds that when poor children grow up in neighborhoods with concentrated poverty, It compounds the odds of poor outcomes later in life. The President's Council of Economic Advisers and the Congress should conduct a comprehensive assessment of the nation's tax, wage, and income support policies and recommend changes to ensure that no child who is supported by a full-time working adult lives in poverty and that no child suffer from deep and persistent poverty, regardless of their parents' work status. In recent years, there's been a dramatic increase in the portion of infants and toddlers in out-of-home care. In 1999, 57% of 2-year-olds, 53% of 1-year-olds, and 44% of all infants under age 1 were in child care. Many mothers of young children are working long hours, often involving nighttime and weekend schedules, and many mothers and fathers juggle non-overlapping shift work to share child-rearing responsibilities. Substantial evidence indicates that children's development is enhanced in child care when it offers stability, nurturance, and stimulation. Yet all too often, child care settings fall short of these goals. Infants in the first year of life may be particularly sensitive to the quality of their child care. There's a pressing need for parents to have more flexibility to decide whether to stay home with their children during infancy. Government and business leaders need to design policies to offer this flexibility. In particular, the Family and Medical Leave Act should be available to all workers, not just to those in companies with 50 or more employees. And strategies for paid parental leave should be designed and implemented. States should be required to lengthen the time period that new mothers are exempt from mandatory work under welfare reform. Because parental leave is typically unpaid, it's not an option for moderate and low-income parents who make up the majority of families in this country. Most parents who work need to place their children in child care, and indeed, most preschool-aged children spend time in out-of-home care. Unfortunately, the quality of such care in America is highly variable. Some child care settings offer children what they need to feel secure and loved, to learn, and to build social skills and friendships. Many do not. Virtually every effort to characterize the quality of child care in the United States has found that about 10 to 20% of all arrangements fall below thresholds of even adequate standards. In one major study, fewer than 20% of toddlers and preschoolers were in settings in which caregivers offered care that was highly characteristic of positive caregiving. The President should establish a joint federal-state-local task force to review the entire portfolio of public investments in child care and early education. This task force should develop a blueprint for community-based systems of early care and education for the coming decade to ensure that all early childhood programs are safe, stimulating, and compatible with the values of their families. The task force should also address the special needs of children with developmental disabilities or chronic health conditions, in addition to make sure that young children have the benefits of sustained relationships with qualified caregivers. The major funding sources for these programs should set aside a portion of money to improve the qualifications and increase the pay and benefits of non-parental caregivers. Research confirms that early childhood development is susceptible to environmental influences and that wise public investment in young children can increase the odds of favorable outcomes. The National Research Council identified a number of examples that illustrate the extent to which current circumstances are blocking the translation of this research into policy and practice, and are inhibiting more constructive sharing among the domains of science, policy, and practice. Numerous sectors of society have important and non-interchangeable roles in ensuring that all children experience a decent quality of life and that they're helped to reach their full potential. Families are the best vehicle for providing loving relationships and for creating safe and nurturing environments that promote healthy physical, cognitive, linguistic, social, emotional, and moral development. Communities can reinforce family values and provide critical support for parenting through voluntary organizations and informal social networks. Businesses can support families by creating positive work environments and offering flexible work schedules and benefits such as health insurance and subsidized child care. Government can relieve some of the pressures facing families through a variety of income support programs, policies that support parents' choice to stay home with their young children, enforcement of standards and subsidies to assure affordable, high-quality child care, and funding for early intervention programs. The time has come for a new national dialogue focused on rethinking the meaning of both individual and shared responsibility for children. Parents, communities, the workplace, government, they all play a critical role in applying the rapidly growing science of early childhood development and the extensive knowledge base on effective intervention programs to guide strategic investments that will ensure a decent quality of life for all of our children and a promising future for the nation. The Committee on Integrating the Science of Early Childhood Development was chaired by Jack P. Shonkoff of the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. For more information on their report titled From Neurons to Neighborhoods, contact the National Academies Press toll-free at 1-800-624-6242. My name is Anne Merchant, and you've been listening to The Sounds of Science, the podcast brought to you by the National Academies, advisors to the nation on science, engineering, and medicine. Be sure to visit us at our website at nationalacademies.org, where we have more than 3,000 books and publications available full text to read free online.